good morning, everyone, and welcome to Dementia Unplugged Care Conversations. We will be talking about dementia warning signs, symptoms, and triggers today. I'm Janine Forrest, and we'll be hosting this program, and we'll be introducing our guest speaker in just a moment. So again, welcome to everyone. Typically, the format is that I give a little bit of an overview, and then we interview our guest and open it up for question and answer for about 15 minutes. So I do want you to locate the chat button and send your questions in through that that mode. I'm going to start out with a little message from the Dementia Society of America. All content, including any potential medical information, is provided as an informational resource only and is not to be used or relied on for any diagnostic or treatment process. It should not be used as a substitute for professional diagnosis, care, and treatment. Please consult your healthcare provider before making any healthcare decisions or for guidance about a specific medical condition. The opinions expressed in the content shared by me, Dr. Forrest, and my guests are not necessarily the opinions and content of the Dementia Society of America. Thank you for listening. So that we're all thinking along the same ways, I'd like to begin by making sure we have a common understanding about the word dementia. Think of the word dementia as an umbrella term, and it represents a variety of subtypes of conditions that present itself in various ways that we call a dementia. Now, in and of itself, dementia, the word itself, is not a disease. I just want to reinforce that that concept. But there are multiple conditions, 200 plus conditions, that present itself as a sort of a syndrome. And there's progressive decline over time in a variety of mental functions. Now, the more common that you may be familiar are things like Alzheimer's disease or vascular dementia. They can be mixed. We also have another type called Lewy body dementia or frontal temporal. Regardless, we're here from the Dementia Society to help with understanding and providing additional support for family and professional caregivers. So today you are joining us for the Dementia Unplugged Care Conversations, but I do want you to be aware that Dementia Unplugged has expanded to include the arts and music. So there's musical connections, and these are monthly sessions, as well as looking at arts through various museums, and it's a monthly life enrichment program, the first Monday of each month. So I hope you can listen to all three, but we're glad you're here now. I now want to introduce our guest speaker, Gary Kozik, a social worker by background. He is the owner of Gary Kozik Elder Care Solutions, LLC. I'm reading this for those who are just calling in. Gary has over 40 years of experience in healthcare, mental health, and working with older adults in settings such as home care, assisted living, personal care facilities, nursing skilled facilities, and outpatient mental health in private practice. You can reach Gary at a later time through GaryKozik.com. That is his website. So now we're going to start our live interview. Oh, let's start here. Okay. And Gary, welcome. Welcome to the show. I'm going to stop sharing so that we can just be on screen for now. So welcome, Gary. So thrilled that you are joining us.
It's a pleasure being here today with you, Janie, and I'm looking forward to sharing information and answering questions today.
Wonderful. And both Gary and I are just so everyone knows, we're on the Dementia the Society of America's Advisory Council, and just very involved and very supportive of Dementia Society of America. But that said, we know that Gary is an expert in his own field. And so, Gary, can you tell us, just start out a little bit about your background and what really prompted your interest in dementia care, brain health, and so on?
So my career path has been evolving over several decades. I just want to note that the first 8 years of my life, I lived upstairs in an apartment above my maternal grandparents. And that had a significant impact on me. When I went to college when I was 17, as a freshman, I came home for my grandmother's funeral, and then my grandfather died 4 days later. Hmm. And so I think from that standpoint, I had an interest in working with older adults. I was involved in my career in early on in developmental disabilities and mental health services. And so I had the opportunity to be interacting with families, and again, older adults. Okay. And then on a personal note, 16 years ago, my father started showing signs of dementia. Mm. And his disease progressed over a 10-year period. And I was the primary caregiver. I have two younger sisters, but I was the primary person providing my father with assistance and support during the progression of his dementia. Wow. So just kind of evolved in terms of my career path. I'm a geriatric care manager. I'm a licensed clinical social worker. And I've been working in care management for a couple decades now. So it just seems a natural fit.
Sure. It's always amazing to me how people often, it's their personal history that brings them into this type of work. And there's a different understanding that happens when you live it, in addition to the academic and career.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, I provide caregiver support groups. And I think since I've been in my own shoes facing the challenges of my father's disease, mm-hmm. so when I'm able to speak with other persons who are struggling in some way, I have firsthand experience. I think from empathy, an empathy standpoint, I certainly could relate to what people are struggling with at times.
Sure. No, that makes a difference. So I'm going to be asking you a little bit more about geriatric care management in a moment, but the topic is warning signs, symptoms, and triggers. So here I am. What's the first thing, or what should I know about in terms of warning signs? What would be useful for those who are sort of new to this experience, this journey? What are we looking for?
Well, there are vast signs and symptoms as far as warning signs are concerned. Sometimes people may be struggling to remember things that happened recently. So in a daily conversation, one may recognize that this person's not remembering something that just happened yesterday, mm-hmm. or perhaps last week. Sometimes people are going to be forgetting names of people who are well known to them, or just objects in their environment. Mm-hmm. I think a real common warning sign for dementia is a person who's repeating themselves or losing their stream of thoughts, basically. Mm-hmm. So I think, again, you know, what happens sometimes is that, well, people who are not having frequent contact with someone may not be picking up on these signs. So it's more in the context of someone you're living with, basically. Now, sometimes the problem is that we have isolation. During the pandemic, people were not going out. So, and isolation contributes to the progression of illness and other types of diseases. It certainly can impact a person's mental health, as far as depression and anxiety. So we may not be seeing these warning signs and symptoms under these unusual times that we just went through. But more importantly, I think when we're living with someone, you know, we could notice that a person's having difficulty remembering or completing familiar tasks, which is what is known as sequential memory. You know, there's a task that needs to be completed, just to say getting a can opener out of the cupboard and trying to open up a can of beans, basically. And if some person's not able to problem solve and manipulate that object when it's something that's been easily done in the past, that would be a little bit out of the ordinary, I would say. Mm-hmm. People have trouble sometimes remembering dates and times. They may not be able to follow conversations that are going on in a group. People have difficulty remembering where they put something. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be happening more on a frequent basis, or they don't remember where things are kept. Again, if you're living with someone and these things start to be happening, then that becomes, a source of concern, basically. Sometimes there's changes in personality and mood. And so sometimes people may not be able to control their emotions. With frontal temporal dementia, there's wide fluctuations in mood. So this person may have had a kind of a laid back, quiet personality. Now we're suddenly seeing these mood swings. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't know what the underlying origin is. But then we have to think about, what are we going to do about this? You know, how do we approach someone and talk about this without causing someone to be defensive?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'm hearing a little bit too, that I want to make sure our audience knows, is that the different types of underlying conditions can present itself a little bit differently each time. So for example, a hallmark of Alzheimer's disease is sort of the short-term memory hallmark, you know, where there's that significant deficit versus someone with FTD being sort of the personality piece. So yeah, so I'm glad you're you know, kind of sharing that. So given the warning signs and triggers, what about sort of the timing of it? Everyone has a bad day, right? I don't know. I normally get, well, what if I forget where my keys are? Does that mean I'm developing an Alzheimer's disease?
Right. You know, I have this saying, you know, true definition of memory loss is we don't remember what we forgot.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So we could circle back and remember where we found our keys. But if we really are forgetful, we don't know where those keys are. We're not going to be able to find them.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when people will try to cover up their deficits as well, there may be some awareness. In my father's case, you know, some man came in the house and moved his things around. It wasn't he who forgot where they were. So, you know, he'd make up those kinds of stories.
Yeah.
I think the other thing here with what we look at, and again, in assessing someone's cognitive functioning, what's happening on a daily basis? There's essentially 14 areas we look at. There's instrumental activities of daily living.
Okay.
So when we're starting to have cognitive decline or where there's some onset of dementia, how is it affecting the person's being able to use the telephone or use the answering machine properly? Mm-hmm. Are they able to use a remote control on the television? You know, which simply would be something that would be easily done in the past. How is shopping impacted? Are they able to shop? In my father's case, he kept buying chicken and ice cream. That's what he'd come home with.
Okay.
Okay. How does person, are they able to cook? You know, do they do housekeeping? Can they do their laundry? Are they able to drive safely or use public transportation? You know, how responsible are they in taking their medications, and how are they able to manage their own finances? So we have 8 areas in terms of what are known as instrumental activities of daily living. And then we also have changes in terms of activities of daily living, and those involve bathing and personal hygiene, eating and dressing, continence of bowel and bladder, to be able to ambulate and get up off the floor and in and out of a chair, and just overall cognitive functioning. So we have these areas that we have to look at, you know, so we may forget where our keys are, but if we start seeing changes in daily functioning, then we have even more concern, to be concerned about.
Yeah, got it. So it's the impact on a daily basis, you know, and it's not this once in a while random, but it's really that the intensity where it's, you're seeing this as, wow, this is a pattern here. Okay.
Right. Right. You know, I got a phone call from my dad and he said, my lawnmower is broken. And so here we have a man who must have cut his grass thousands of times. And what happened is he forgot the sequence of how to start the lawnmower.
Sure. Okay.
There was nothing wrong with the lawnmower.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's an indication that there's some type of underlying problem that needs to be looked into.
So, okay. So now we call, perhaps one of the team members we call in is a geriatric care manager. And what is that? You are one, but please help the audience to understand why someone like you would be important to be part of the care team.
Well, I'm a care manager. There's an association called the Aging Life Care Association, Life Care Management Association. And a care manager should be a professionally licensed person. It could be a registered nurse, a licensed psychologist, a licensed clinical social worker, an occupational therapist. So you want to make sure that the care manager has the proper credentials and has some accountability to a code of ethics as well. A care manager is responsible for making an assessment on the feasibility of whether someone can live safely at home in the least restrictive setting without having their health or safety compromised.
Okay.
Because of some type of disease or a form of dementia compromising daily functioning.
Mm-hmm.
So a care manager can conduct an assessment and then develop a plan. We assess to what extent someone has a support system in place and how that support system may be vulnerable or weak in some way, which would not allow someone to continue to live at home because they don't have the proper supports around them. So we look at those areas that I mentioned before, like using the telephone, can the person drive, you know, the daily functioning of activities, basically. Mm-hmm. And to what extent are those compromised? And does this person have the proper supports to be able to live at home? Mm-hmm. A care manager will make a determination on whether or not someone needs assistance in a home. So a care manager can do the vetting of a home non-medical home care company, mm-hmm. or do research in whether or not someone needs an assisted living facility. Mm-hmm. So we provide advocacy, information, and referral. We also provide education to family members regarding what needs need to be attentive to. So there's an educational process, how to communicate with someone with dementia. So there's guidance in that area. There's end-of-life issues as well, and that we have to look at. So we are going to make sure that the person has a power of attorney in place or a living will. And then we would be also collaborating with the person's physicians and specialists and making referrals and coordinating care if necessary. So a care manager is really holistic. It's like a one-stop shop as far as a concierge service. In my situation, sometimes I've had to arrange for a roof to be put on someone's house or a fence built or getting a plumber to come in because the person may not have the kind of supports or the support system that it does exist. They're not readily available to take care of things.
Yeah.
Wow, so it's very comprehensive in terms of the scope of a care manager.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I often get from my private practice is, well, you know, I can see that my mom or dad needs a lot of help, but they think they're fine. Thank you very much. And we don't need anyone. And so how would you answer that? My mom doesn't think she needs any help. What recommendations would you give to that?
Well, I think, you know, that's a form of resistance, you know, resistance to accepting help, which would mean change. Mm-hmm. So I would not try to tell the person what to do. I would avoid that. No one likes to be told what to do, especially adult child telling their older parent you know, what needs to happen here.
Sure.
So I think, you know, you want to understand, okay, what's behind this notion that I don't need any help? And so I don't have a quick answer here, Janine, mm-hmm. because it's complicated because the person may have a cognitive impairment whereby their judgment is impaired and their self-awareness. So there's, may say, the executive lobe, the frontal lobe of the brain is impaired. So you may not be able to reason with your mother as to the reasons why she needs help. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a deeper understanding in terms of that process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would simply ask, okay, I agree with you. You don't need help. Tell me the reasons why you feel you don't need help. Mm-hmm. And I just begin where she's at. Mm-hmm. So you're entering her world rather than insisting on you do need help. And, you know, you remember when someone might say, you remember when you forgot where you were when you're driving?
Yeah.
Well, this could probably enlist a defensive response from your mother.
Sure. They may not remember that.
So it's not a one-stop shop mm-hmm. in the day conversation. It's a process, I think.
Yeah.
You need to be able to, I would say, have my work. I have to have therapeutic leverage or trust. I have to establish rapport. Yeah. You know, you have rapport with your mom, I'm assuming. So, mm-hmm. So you would have, you know, some influence there. Again, it depends on the relationship, too. Let's just say you have three siblings. There may be one sibling who's way better at being able to let their parent know that there's some problems and they may need some help. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If it comes from another sibling where the relationship is a little bit more distant and maybe there's some mistrust, that's not the person who should have the conversation.
Yeah. So I think it's important here for listeners to understand this. There's not a perfect answer. So exactly. I understand that it's a very challenging situation, a very common situation, very challenging. What's worked for me over time is sometimes I say, well, you know, I need the help, Mom. I'm the one who needs more support. So if you can help me, that would be really useful.
Yes.
Wearing out. And that sense of being needed or sometimes helps in that situation. Another question is, you know, we're talking about warning signs, triggers, but a common question is, so when do I, what point is it appropriate to think about assisted living or getting home, you know, help in the home? How do we decipher that piece?
That's a challenging question, because the answers lie in how intact is the support system and what kind of behaviors are being presented that's putting someone at risk.
Mm.
So we can arrange for support to come into the home, such as a home care company coming in. But then again, is there going to be pushback or resistance to having someone, a stranger, come in and help someone?
Yeah.
So we can try to, but the home is most likely the least restrictive setting until something starts happening where the person's wandering and they're lost in the neighborhood, or they started burning food on the stove.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are forgetting to take their medications. And there's another element here. You know, some people have a high tolerance for accepting risk. And there are some individual caregivers who are going to be overwhelmed and fearful and feeling over, you know, just not prepared to be able to handle the situation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, again, the support system, I think, is important here in terms of whether or not someone could remain at home. Now, if they can't, then we look at accessing assisted living, and then we have to make an informed decision. You have to look at more than one assisted living program, and finances come into play. These programs are expensive.
Yeah,
most of them are private pay. And they could range anywhere from $4,000 to $9,000 a month, depending on need.
Mm-hmm.
And daily costs of prescriptions and how many people have to be involved in helping someone get, take a shower in the facility or get dressed.
Mm-hmm.
So there's wide variation here. So I think, you know, you're looking at when you have the intersection of risk and danger, some type of incident that's occurring in the home, someone says, okay, what's the best setting? Is it going to be having help come in, or should we move into a facility? And it varies from person to person.
Risk and danger, not only to the person living with the dementia, but the risk to the caregiver, you know, the stress overload. I think there's always this thought of, you know, the my loved one, but you're right. You need to have a healthy, intact caregiver, because it's a long journey and it can be overwhelming, especially if you have multiple other competing responsibilities of maybe working full time and children and all of that. So that's where particularly care managers are essential.
Yeah, I think, you know, a care manager is an extension of the family unit in a way.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone's at work and they're not able to make themselves available because of their work to get their mother or father to a medical appointment, that care manager is going to be able to accept the responsibility of making sure that that takes place. Could be at the appointment, making sure the right questions are being asked or the issues being addressed, can report back to the family member as to the outcome of the medical consultation. I just want to add, you know, when you start seeing these signs and triggers affecting daily functioning, I think it's really important to seek professional help in terms of start with the primary care physician. A neurologist may need to be involved. A psychiatrist may need to be involved to begin to get a more thorough assessment in terms of what this person's facing in terms of decline of daily functioning and what the causes are.
Yeah, so once they do happen, yeah, because there could be some underlying medical conditions that can be reversible. Thyroid levels are off, or, you know, unfortunately a brain tumor or something like that. That
exactly.
could explain these things. So that's important for, you know, the audience to understand that you get these warning signs, triggers. You want to rule out a whole variety of other underlying conditions first, and then it may be a dementia or it may be not.
I had a referral several years ago because the person was acting, their behavior was off. They seemed to be, they're being very aggressive and they were, very agitated. As it turned out, they had a low sodium level. They did the lab work. And once that was fixed, the person was fine. So that's just underscores the importance of having a thorough medical workup.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all of that. All right. What I would like our audience to do is start thinking about your questions, and you can start entering them through the chat. And we have a raised hand. Okay. Got a raised hand, but if you could send in a question for now. We're looking for questions. Takes a minute. So while people are thinking about any questions that have, kind of seeped through during this conversation, my question is maybe just a practical one. We've got these triggers, these warning signs. We're talking about changes in the ability to make judgments, perhaps remember, and that may show up in the form of having difficulty driving, which is really difficult to negotiate someone who's maybe been driving 50 years. Now all of a sudden they're just not safe, but they don't see that rational part of the brain. They have that lack of safety awareness. So where do you go from here, Gary?
Well, that's often a very conflictual situation where someone's feeling that their loss of independence is going to be impacted because their car is going to be taken away or they're not able to drive. So the conversation, sometimes there is concrete evidence. There's dents in the car. There's a motor vehicle violation. So there's the police had given some type of ticket. So when we start seeing a pattern or erratic driving, I think this becomes part of a conversation with a physician as well. I think you have to bring in the doctor. Sometimes the conversation has to be behind the scenes, between the caregiver or the spouse or the adult child in advance of a medical appointment to share the observations or concerns or the evidence. So the physician can broach that subject as well. Mm-hmm. Physicians are obligated to report to the Department of Motor Vehicles if there's dementia and risk of harm to self or others while driving.
Okay.
So in my involvement, usually I end up being the third party that's going to be like a mediator here. Mm-hmm. And I try to promote having a driver's evaluation. It's a win-win situation. If the person passes this evaluation, let them drive. If the person's not able to pass this evaluation, then the physician will get a report and they'll contact Department of Motor Vehicles. And so it's a win-win because we don't want the person driving the car to be hurt or killed, and we don't want the public to be in danger either.
And then they're evaluated more frequently. I am now seeing a few questions come in, so hang in there. The first one is, are we close to any significant medications to slow down or to cure the effects of the syndrome?
Well, we're not close enough, that's for sure. I don't know about a cure.
Or a medication to even slow it down. So I think.
Yeah, Exelon patch, Namenda, Aricept, these are the more common drugs that are being used. The efficacy of the drugs tends to diminish over time, as the dementias progress. There are some, there is some research that's going on. There is a website called clinicaltrials.gov. So you would be able to get a comprehensive registry of federal and private research that's going on in terms of medications. Mm-hmm. So, the consumer could simply go to clinicaltrials.gov and you'd be getting a listing of the research, basically. Mm-hmm. There's a study going on for frontal temporal dementia. It's called All FTD study, and they're looking at 19 sites across the country where they're assessing data on patients from collecting cognitive and behavioral data from assessments, basically, and they're using they want to use that to target treatment or start having some drug trials targeting FTD based on these assessments.
Thank you, Gary. And also, the audience should know that the Dementia Society of America also has information about clinical trials. Another piece here is that because there's so many different underlying conditions, a current theory is that there won't be a one-size-fits-all. There won't be a magic pill to slow down all of these different types of underlying conditions. So that's what even adds to the complexity of this issue. Okay. Another question. Is there home care for someone with dementia who needs to be lifted in and out of bed, or would that person need to be in a facility?
Both could happen, actually. Depending on, you could have medically based skilled home care at home, written with a prescription written by a physician saying that this person needs to have, in some cases, what is known as a Hoyer lift, to get them in and out of bed. So you could have that does take place. And then there, you also have skilled nursing needs where you would go to a facility for that type of care. Mm-hmm. Long-term skilled nursing facilities, the person's skilled needs need to be certified by a physician. The skilled needs need to be on a continuum of time beyond 90 days. So if it was a short-term type of situation, they may be in rehab and then being able to go back home. Again, what's the underlying condition for the reasons why someone has to be lifted in and out of bed? Mm-hmm. But I have a client now who has a physical therapy assistant and a care aide coming in, and the person is, they have a lift and they're able to get them in and out of the bed as needed. So again, you're looking at a lot of other medical conditions or comorbid conditions that might be contributing to this person's need that would require them to be in a facility.
Okay. Thank you, Jake. Thank you. Is there any question that I didn't ask you or the audience didn't ask you that you want to make sure that we know before we come to a close?
I think the hardest step for people to take is to make that phone call and say, I need help. Mm. So I think, you know, we fight for our independence, and we don't want to necessarily caregivers and persons with dementia in early stages. There's a tendency of wanting to hide from it. So admitting that there's a problem is a big step, I think, mm-hmm. For people. Because there's a lot of fear that's here as well that we have to consider. You know, mm-hmm. Some people fear knowing what they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's devastating to learn that I'm being diagnosed with a form of dementia. Therefore, I'm not going to want to go in that direction. I want to hide from it.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that's another element here that sometimes results in delaying help, and then things get worse. Sometimes there's an incident that takes place. Mm-hmm. People just don't want to be able to have to contend with it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Thank you. I think that just reinforces that help is here. Mm-hmm. We don't have to reinvent the wheel. That's particularly why the Dementia Society of America is available, so that people don't have to, I don't want to say make the mistakes, but go through difficulty that they may not need to, because there is assistance that is offered. So I'm going to share the screen again. And we did our interview. Thank you. We did our questions. We just want to thank the Dementia Society of America so much for hosting this show. You can take a look at the website. It's just chock full of information, including what I had mentioned in clinical trials, information about medications, care managers. So it is a sort of a one-stop shop. Consider donating. It is it a not-for-profit, and it's an all-volunteer organization. So if you haven't had the opportunity, please take a look at the website. I do want you to know that this session obviously is recorded and will be available on YouTube, and in a little while the program will be available in its entirety on the website. So stay tuned for that. And on that note, I just want to thank you, Gary, really, for elucidating this topic. There's so much information out there. So helping us to distill what warning signs to look for, particularly, you know, where it impacts daily function and the necessity to get a medical evaluation. But then bringing in people like yourself, the right. care manager, as part of the team to offer support and navigation. And so we just thank you for your time and what you do and your expertise. And I want to thank everyone for tuning in and listening and for being part of this program, and look forward to hearing and seeing people participate next month. So take care, everyone, and be well.